are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Unfortunately, it's a misery Monday here on the podcast. The Seahawks coming up short in a 17-0 loss to the Packers at Lambeau Field on Sunday. They've now lost 10 consecutive games in Green Bay. It truly has been a house of horrors, and they were not able to fix that issue yesterday, dropping to 3-6 in the season. I'm going to be sharing some observations from that ugly loss at Lambeau Field, and of course, tackling your questions in our weekly mailbag segment. Thanks for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen every day. We are free and available on all platforms. Once again, thanks for listening 5 days a week. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. With Russell Wilson back in action after missing 3 games, this time things would be different at Lambeau Field. This time, the Seahawks would finally get the monkey off their back and win for the first time in more than 2 decades in Titletown. Well, unfortunately, that darn monkey not only isn't gone, but he's far more annoying than ever. 17-0, the Seahawks go down via shutout. It's the first time that Seattle has been shut out since 2011 when Tavares Jackson was playing quarterback, the pre-Russell Wilson era. Clearly the lowest point total of the Wilson era. The worst performance they had with Russell Wilson under center was in 2016 when they lost 9-3 to the Los Angeles Rams. Typically, the Seahawks find a way to get at least 7 points on the board, very rarely less than that. But this was a historic game for all the wrong reasons for the Seahawks offensively, and it's continuing a trend that, unfortunately, we have seen play out every single time the Seahawks have played at Lambeau Field. In their last 5 games now playing at Lambeau, Seattle has scored a grand total of 12 points in 10 quarters of play in the first half. That's just unheard of. Every single time they are playing in Green Bay, they get up to slow starts. Whatever it is, they just cannot score points there. And you got to give the Packers defense a lot of credit. They held the Chiefs to 14 points the week before. They have been dominant on defense. Their pass rush is ferocious. Their front seven in general plays really well, plays really physical football, knows how to get after the quarterback. They can stop the run. And the secondary, their best corner, Jaire Alexander, has been out since week 4, and yet their secondary hasn't missed a beat. They know how to eliminate big plays. The Seahawks were not able to connect on downfield throws yesterday. And as has been the case for the last couple of years, when you take away those explosives for the Seahawks, this offense really struggles. And so they were not able to overcome that. Kind of got away from the run game. We'll talk about this a little bit more later in the show, but it just another game they could not find the offensive rhythm that they are going to need to be able to compete against quality football teams. And the Green Bay Packers are a very good football team. There's a reason they are now 8-2. Their offense has not been dynamic this year. The Packers, I believe, are 17th or 18th in points per game. So it's not like they've been lighting up scoreboards, but the defense is now in the top 3 for points per game allowed after shutting out the Seahawks. That is a legit top 5 defense they've got there with Joe Barry as the coordinator. He adopted a lot of things he learned from Brandon Staley as an assistant with the Rams last year, and he's been able to implement those wrinkles with this defense, and they just keep getting better week after week after week. So again, give the Packers some credit for what they have been able to do defensively, but the Seahawks just continuously shot themselves in the foot yesterday. Russell Wilson did not look ready to play, and everyone expected there to be some rust. I mean, this is the first time that Russell Wilson, his entire career, missed games from an injury. He'd been out for a month, so there were going to be some passes that he missed, certainly. There were going to be some decisions that maybe were delayed a little bit because he's been out for a month, but he was far worse than I ever could have expected he was going to be in this game. I don't know that the finger had anything to do with it. He and Pete Carroll denied that it did after the game. Maybe it didn't, but he certainly didn't look ready to play. It just looked like it looked like the stage was a little too bright for him. And again, he has not played well in Green Bay his entire career. He's never had a good game at Lambeau Field, and that's why the Seahawks are 0-5 there since Wilson came into the league. They have not been able to put points on the board, and a lot of that has fallen on the quarterback subpar play, and that continued yesterday, going 20 for 40, 161 passing yards, 39.7 passer rating, which is the fourth worst in a single game in his career. And it would have been the worst if not for some garbage time completions towards the end of the fourth quarter. He was on pace to have the worst passer rating in a game that he's ever had. And a couple quick completions changed that. But it was arguably the roughest performance of his entire career when he put everything together. And given the circumstances, maybe he should be given a pass. But he shouldered the blame after the game, and understandably, he should have. This was a game that the Seahawks had every chance to win. The defense gave them that opportunity, and yet Russell Wilson and the offense, they let the defense down. They didn't provide the support they needed to win this game, and now the Seahawks are 3-6. The playoffs already seemed like a relative long shot. Now it seems near impossible. Even though this is a weak conference after the first couple teams in the NFC, number of teams that the Seahawks are competing against for a wild card spot, won yesterday. That certainly does not help Seattle. With that extra game being added onto the schedule, they can still get to the postseason, but they're going to need to win out or come very close after losing this game, especially now that the 49ers beat the Rams on Monday Night Football. The 49ers are now in third place in the division at 4-5. The Seahawks in dead last at 3-6. They're going to have to win out. They're going to have to come close. They can only really afford to lose one, two games at the most if they want to get to the postseason. And nothing that we saw yesterday from Russell Wilson in the offense suggests that that's possible. And obviously, Russell Wilson could look much better next week. The Seahawks have to hope that he does, especially with the Cardinals coming off of a blowout loss to the Panthers. They're going to be angry. Good chance they're going to have Kyler Murray back, a few of their other injured players. So they are going to be close to full strength, looking to get back in the win column, try to get back into the number one spot in the NFC. So the Seahawks are going to have to bring their A game, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, and try to rebound from this disaster at Lambeau Field. And they got to hope that it's just a curse playing in Green Bay, and they're going to be able to turn things around back at home next week. Because if they lose this next game and fall to 3-7, again, they won't be mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, but basically they will be one loss away from eliminating themselves in reality. This is a weak conference. Maybe a 9-8 team gets into the playoffs in that last wildcard spot, but the Seahawks have very little margin for error. They didn't have much margin for error going into this game, and that margin for error is even smaller now after losing a game that certainly was a winnable one. They may be kicking themselves, especially if they miss the playoffs by one game. This will be one, along with the Titans game, they were ahead for most of the game. They're going to be looking back at those games wondering, how did we let those opportunities slip away? And it's unfortunate for a talented team. They just haven't been able to put things together this year. And that's why they've lost six of their first nine games and dug themselves this major hole to try to crawl out of with eight games left on the schedule. When I return for the second quarter, I'm going to be tackling your questions in our weekly Monday mailbag segment. I'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without all of that hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. No more juggling remotes, no need to buy another device ever again, and the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Let's get right to the mailbag questions coming off of that rough game in Green Bay. A lot of negative questions, and I expected that. I'm going to tackle some of those, but there were certainly some positive questions to look at as well. So a lot of different topics that are going to be addressed here in this mailbag. We're going to start with a question from Pratik, who says, "We say the NFL is a copycat league, but we have been trying to copy the Rams' offense. They hired an offensive coordinator from that system, but I feel the offense looks very similar to last year. Am I wrong? What gives?" I would not disagree with that assessment at this point. It feels like, and I joked last week about this on our crossover episode with Peter Bukowski of Locked On Packers, but it feels like in week one, Shane Waldron had, you know, the department store feel with this offense that you could see through the glass. You could see, you know, little kids, they get so excited about seeing toys and they're getting excited for Christmas this time of year. It almost feels like Shane Waldron did that to Seahawks fans in week one. He tantalized them. He teased them. This can be the type of offense that you guys can have week in, week out, with a lot of the similar wrinkles that we see from Sean McVay and a number of the offenses in the league. More pre-snap motion, using tight ends, a diverse run game, mixing in under center with shotgun. And ever since that week one game, those four things have been seen sparingly, to be honest. I mean, we just have not seen that different offense. It really has looked like Brian Schottenheimer's offense for the last couple of years. And the Seahawks had a lot of success doing that for a good deal of that time. But there's a reason that you made the change that you did. You were wanting a more diverse offense. You were wanting some of those modernized wrinkles. You just wanted to see more of the pre-snap motion. You wanted to see that diverse run game. You wanted to see your tight ends getting more involved, which has been a consistent issue for the Seahawks. And really, we just haven't seen any of those things consistently since week one. So again, Waldron was just teasing fans. And since then, I don't know if it's that he has not been able to make adjustments or maybe he's overcomplicated things, but this offense just has not looked creative. It's been a boring scheme since week one. There's been a few other instances where you've seen individual drives where there's been tempo mixed in and you've seen some of these other elements at play. But for the most part, this has been a very disappointing transition. And you can give him a little bit of a leash because Waldron is a first-time play caller, but you have Russell Wilson as your quarterback. You got a number of big-name weapons on offense. This team should be able to put up points. So I do think the buck stops with Shane Waldron at this point. He has to do a better job of getting this offense rolling and give his quarterback and all the other players plays that they can be effective with. So you can put some of the blame on the players for the lack of execution, but I do think the offensive coordinator at this point, it's been a struggle. There's no question about it. Hawkstrologer tweets, "Do you have any insight on why the Seahawks didn't run the ball more yesterday? It seemed like we had good things going with running the ball and tight end usage, but we didn't stick with it." So as far as tight end usage, I actually was pretty pleased with how the Seahawks used tight ends yesterday compared to the rest of the offense. That might have been one of the few bright spots, because when you score 0 points, there are not very many bright spots. But Gerald Everett was much more involved. Will Disley had a big 28-yard reception. Unfortunately, he also had a 6-yard catch and a flea flicker that a negative 6-yard reception that blew up in Seattle's face, and that impacted his stats quite a bit. But I thought the tight ends were more active, and they certainly helped out in the run game. It was confusing, especially late in the second quarter when the Seahawks were driving down the field. They had a great situation to be able to get the run game going. Alex Collins had a couple really nice runs, and then that flea flicker just destroyed the drive. Then in the third quarter, before Russell Wilson's first interception, they got down into the red zone in large part because of their run game. And then they threw the ball 4 consecutive plays, the last one being that ugly interception thrown to Kevin King. So I'm not sure what happened there. Maybe, again, Shane Waldron's overthinking things. Maybe Russell Wilson changed the plays to passes. The buck might stop at the quarterback in that case. But Pete Carroll was lamenting about it today. He's wanted them to run the ball more, and some fans have criticized the offensive approach. You can't say that he has been getting Shane Waldron saying, "Hey, we're going to run it 45 times every single game." That has not been the case at all. Yesterday was a game that they could have ran against light boxes more often, and they just weren't able to do it. They chose not to an extent, and then they just didn't have the football enough to be able to get the carries that Pete Carroll wants from his running backs. Mike sent tweets. 6 weeks ago, we all thought this defense would hold the Seahawks back, but we were all wrong. Can both sides of the ball come together? And do you think this team has the ability to go 7-1, surprise us all, and make the playoffs? I certainly think the talent is here. I've been saying this for weeks. The talent is on the roster for this team to go on a run. You didn't see that reflected on offense yesterday. I thought on defense you did. I mean, if you hold the Packers to 17 points, that's an impressive performance. And given the fact that 14 of those came late when they were worn down, they hadn't been helped by the offense, this was a dominant effort by the defense. If the Seahawks defense plays like that consistently, they should be able to win a lot of games. But the offense has to be able to hold up its end of the bargain. And yesterday clearly did not do that. So until I see a few games where this offense is really clicking to go with that defense, this was an issue last year. The offense was not good in the second half. They were phenomenal the first half, but the defense was terrible the first half. They were good in the second half. They just have not been able to get both sides of the ball playing well at the same time. If they could, they'd be dangerous. But until I actually see it happen, not going to be banking on it at this point. It just seems like there's enough working against this team right now. Finishing 7-1 is going to be extremely difficult, even with a number of favorable games left on their schedule. They got to go out and prove they can play at that level. To this point, they just haven't. Jason Shepard tweets, with the wheels coming off the bus, will this coming offseason be a hold-tight retool or a rebuild? And if the later is the option picked, with no first-round pick, will the Seahawks look to trade Russell Wilson? I think it's way too early in the process, especially since Russell Wilson missed 3 games with an injury. That certainly impacted the record for this football team, impacted how he played yesterday after missing a month. I think that could factor into how Russell Wilson feels after the season if Seattle misses the playoffs. Now, if they just lose another 4 or 5 games and everything's falling apart, then he may push buttons wanting traded. But his injury has played a lot into the record that they currently have right now. So I think it's too early to know that the Seahawks are going to be doing that. Me personally, I would not be trying to move him. I would make other moves within the organization if I had to, but certainly it's a possibility. I think it's too early to consider that. But if things keep trending the way that they are, I don't know what kind of a rebuild the Seahawks are going to be able to do because they have so many good players that are on big contracts that are going to be tough to move. So, you know, maybe you do get a bunch of first-round picks for Russell Wilson, but there's not a lot of options to do that. I think that the retool idea is probably what they would go with again. The question is, how much are you going to be able to do that with the lack of financial flexibility? I mean, there's no doubt about it. The Seahawks are in a really tough spot right now because they have a lot of established stars like Russell Wilson, Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner that have huge contracts, and trying to work around those deals, especially with some of the dead cap money they're going to have on the books next year, the voided years after this pandemic salary cap this past offseason. There's a lot of things at play here that are going to complicate things. But unless they just completely fall apart and unravel in the second half, I find it hard to believe they're going to do a total rebuild. If they end up finishing with only 5 wins or something, though, that could happen. You could see wide-scale changes in the front office. You could see Pete Carroll moving on. You could see Russell Wilson moving on. I mean, they could just decide to blow everything up. But right now, I think it would be much more likely they're going to try to retool the roster around the stars that they have. Michael Garrett tweets, Seahawks can't defend the screens and jet sweeps. They haven't for years since Dan Quinn left. Who takes responsibility for that? You know, this certainly is an issue that falls on both coaches and players, because when you get gashed by screens over and over again, you've got to wonder, what can we do schematically to try to take those plays away? But I think at this point, this largely falls on the players. Stopping screens has a lot to do with instincts, and you still see players on this defense when it's obvious, especially along the defensive line, it's obvious that the blockers in front of them are letting them walk into the backfield. They're doing it on purpose. You've got to have the instincts to put on the brakes and realize, hey, they want me to end up deep in the backfield. It's a screen. And then your guys on the outside, whether it's corners or linebackers, too many times they have allowed screens to bounce outside and they've gotten blocked inside. And I've seen Ugo Amadi do that a handful of times. Those are things that cannot happen. So I think this falls more on the players than the coaches at this point. They've got to execute better, and they've got to play smart football. A lot of this has just been not reading and figuring out that it's a screen quick enough. And when you're not able to do that, then you're going to allow big plays. And that is something that has plagued the Seahawks all year long. It plagued them last year. This has been a problem for several years running, but I feel like this falls a lot on the players. Last question here, real quick. Gareth Martindale, if Pete Carroll decides to call it a day at the end of the season, who would be your ideal replacement? Again, I think it's way too early to be speculating this type of a scenario, but Pete Carroll is 70 years old, even with the extension he signed last year. If this year continues to unravel and they lose 10, 11, 12 games, like if somehow that happened, I think that's probably not going to be the case. I expect the Seahawks are going to win a handful of games down the stretch here, but if they lose double-digit games, Pete Carroll might decide, you know what, it's time for me to walk away. He might not want to end his coaching career on that note, though, either. If he does decide to step away, or the Seahawks made him, you know, forced him into retirement, or they said, we're going to fire you otherwise, we don't know how any of this is going to play out. But Brian Daboll of the Buffalo Bills, their offensive coordinator, he would be head and shoulders my first choice. I think he's fantastic. The work he has done with Josh Allen in Buffalo has been nothing short of phenomenal. I mean, Allen was so raw coming into the league. And for him to progress the way that he has, Buffalo becoming one of the most prolific offenses in the league, they've continued that this year with one hiccup in Jacksonville, but this is an explosive offense. Daboll would be my first pick. I'd love to see him with Russell Wilson. Eric Bieniemy would be number two. I think that offensive mind needs to be the goal if you're going to move on from Pete Carroll. And I'm not necessarily advocating for that, but if they were going to move on from him and get a new coach, I think you got to get an offensive-minded coach that is going to be able to work with Russell Wilson. You got to keep your star quarterback happy. And I think if they were able to bring in a big name like that, that has coordinated some high-profile offenses, done great work with quarterbacks, I think you could keep number three happy with being in Seattle. So it would be one of those two would be the most ideal candidates, in my opinion. When I return to the third quarter, going to revisit yesterday's game at Lambeau Field, the Seahawks 17-0 loss to the Packers. Going to look at the good, the bad, and the ugly from Week 10. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. If you haven't tried a Built Bar by now, you are missing out. They say it's a protein bar, but it certainly doesn't taste like one. You have to try one of these amazing bars yourself to truly believe it. Most protein bars are chalky or waxy, but a Built Bar is soft, covered in 100% real chocolate. You bite into it, you know you're eating something different. It's an experience. In fact, you'd swear you're eating a candy bar. Built Bars are low-carb, low-calorie, low-fat, low-sugar, and high in protein. All the healthy benefits on top of just being purely delicious. So many amazing flavors. Raspberry, mint brownie, coconut almond, my personal favorite, peanut butter brownie. This month, Built is coming out with new limited time flavors every 3 to 4 days. So check their website often. You don't want to miss out. Go to Built.com and use the promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your order. That's LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. BetOnline is back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit by using the promo code LOCKEDON. From basketball, football, baseball, postseason, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Misery Monday edition. Unfortunately, the Seahawks losing for the sixth time in 9 games on Sunday at Lambeau Field. Now 10 consecutive losses in Green Bay dating back to 2003. They haven't won there since 1999. Unfortunately, that streak is going to continue for at least one more year. If somehow the Seahawks get to the playoffs, maybe they play at Lambeau. Seahawks fans are hoping that's not the case if they get in the playoffs, given the struggles they've had there. But going to have to wait a while to have another opportunity to end that streak. 17-0 being shut out for the first time since 2011. Such a disappointing performance on offense in Russell Wilson's return from injury. But there were plenty of positives in this football game. So I'm going to start with the good from Sunday's contest. Have to start with the defense. So much to be excited about. 3 points for the Packers in three quarters. That is a heck of a defensive effort all around by the Seahawks. And I know Aaron Rodgers was activated from the COVID-19 reserve list on Saturday, did not get to practice this week. Certainly that impacted Green Bay's offense. He was not close to his normal self either. So this is a matchup normally you've been really excited about, seeing Russell Wilson against Aaron Rodgers. Both quarterbacks were very underwhelming in yesterday's game, but the defenses had a lot to do with that. And maybe the most impressive thing the Seahawks did yesterday, Devontae Adams did have a 34-yard reception, but for the most part, the Seahawks held him in check. And in the past, he has murdered their secondary, but he had 7 catches for 78 yards, no touchdowns yesterday. DJ Reed and rookie Trey Brown did a really nice job against him in coverage. And I can't say enough about Trey Brown. He continues to make plays. And he played all 100 snaps for the Seahawks yesterday. So it looks like they've moved on from Sidney Jones starting. They wean Trey Brown into that starting role. Now he and DJ Reed are your 1-2 punch at corner. Smaller, more feisty corners. They're really fitting what the Seahawks want to do at that cornerback spot. Even though they don't fit the typical prototype that Pete Carroll has used on the outside with bigger, longer-armed corners. These two check off a lot of the other boxes, and they're just playing really sound football. And Trey Brown had a nice fourth down pass breakup against Allen Lazard, who's 6'5", around 220 pounds. Trey Brown is 5'10", about 180. So he gives up a ton of height and weight in that matchup, but he does not back down, gets the pass breakup to force a turnover on down. So I thought both those guys, DJ Reed gave up a 41-yard completion to Marquez Valdez-Scantling on the opening drive of the game where he slipped on the Lambeau turf, but otherwise he was perfect. The other three targets on him were incomplete. He almost got a pick six on that first drive as well. Would have been huge in this game when the offense couldn't score any points themselves. Missed out on that opportunity, but I thought both those guys played well. Rasheem Green did a nice job making some big plays. The pass rusher had the Seahawks' only sack, also forced a holding penalty one play earlier. So especially early on, he made an impact. And I thought Jamal Adams, this was his best game as a Seahawk. 12 combined tackles, 2 quarterback hits. So he was able to get pressure on Aaron Rodgers a couple of times and put some hits on him. And his first interception as a Seahawk finally happens. It was a critical play, too. Moments after Russell Wilson's first pick, Aaron Rodgers led the Packers down the field and then threw up a prayer in the end zone, kind of a ill-conceived throw. And Jamal Adams capitalizing the opportunity, bringing it down for his first pick of the season. His first pick as a Seahawk, didn't have one last year. He was all over the field. Just a fantastic effort. And Jordan Brooks played really well, too. Took away a seam route in coverage. Team high 13 tackles. Was flying all over the place. Did miss a few tackles in the second half. Missed on a big screen to A.J. Dillon. But I thought overall, another really good game for the second-year linebacker. And on offense, it's really hard to find good things on the offensive side of the ball when you don't score any points. But Alex Collins, when he was given the chance to run the football, was effective. 4.1 yards per carry, had some really nice runs to provide a bit of offensive balance. You would have liked to see a few more carries for him, Travis Homer, maybe DJ Dallas. Rashad Penny did not play at all in this game. They, just as Pete Carroll said today, would have liked to have established the run game a bit more than they did. The number of carries is not where Pete Carroll wants it to be at. That's been a consistent issue this year. They had problems with that in the second half last season as well. And a lot of it boils down to the possessions just aren't long enough. They're not sustaining drives to be able to keep that run game going and wear opponents down the way opponents are doing to their defense. And that leads me into the bad here. On defense, there's not a lot to be upset about. They still had their problems with screens. Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon had some big plays in the screen and dump-off game. And the other issue was dealing with A.J. Dillon in the fourth quarter. 250-pound back, as great as the Seahawks defense played in this football game, by that point, they were exhausted. The Packers had had the ball for 15-plus more minutes in the game, and by that point, they just didn't have much left in the tank, and the Packers have a very good backup running back in A.J. Dillon, who is a freight train, and him dragging Bobby Wagner to the end zone, you just don't see that happen to Bobby Wagner. This defense just cracked late. Can't necessarily blame them for that. They got put in a really difficult spot with the offense not being able to do anything. But it was an A.J. Dillon show late, with him having two rushing touchdowns, a 50-yard catch on a screen play. He really tortured the Seahawks in that last quarter. So that's something they've got to figure out how to address. The thing is, the offense is just as much to blame for putting them in that position. As far as the offense goes, there's a lot that can go into bad. There's a lot that can go into ugly. The things that, you know, are bad, but not necessarily the worst things we saw on Sunday, the errant throws and the missed receivers for Russell Wilson. And what I mean by that, not only was he inaccurate compared to normal, there were several throws that just got away from him and sailed on receivers. There were also a lot of opportunities where he was indecisive and had open receivers in the middle of the field and just didn't unload the football. He was gun shy. We saw a lot of that in the second half last year. That was not as big of an issue before his injury this season. That may have just boiled down to not being on the field, being out for a month, or maybe it's a sign of some things to come. It's been a persistent issue for him in the past. So that really hindered this offense, that he wasn't able to complete passes that he normally would have, and he missed some opportunities where the Seahawks could have moved the ball through the air by holding onto the football, putting himself into tough spots, creating extra pressure that didn't necessarily need to be there from the Packers' front line. And I thought botched calls were a big theme in this game. I will say this. I don't think the officials cost the Seahawks the game. That's never the case. The Seahawks scored 0 points, and who would have known? You know, who knows if they actually put any points on the board off of those botched calls by officials. But there were two that stood out. Darrell Taylor in the second quarter, it looked very evident to me from the replay that when Aaron Rodgers fumbled a snap, it looked clear as day that Darrell Taylor had a clean recovery there. And then Aaron Rodgers jumped in the last second and got his hands on the football. But that did not look like simultaneous possession to me. But after reviewing it, that was the ruling, that both players had positioned the ball. That goes to the offense. Packers maintained the ball. Pete Carroll loses the challenge. Seahawks lose a timeout. They would have had the ball at midfield. Who knows if they would have done anything with that great field position, given the struggles on offense. But it could have been a game-changing possession with that short field. We'll never know. And then in the second half, Russell Wilson's first interception, it was a bad decision. It was a poor throw. But Kevin King, I don't believe, actually finished that interception. And they ruled that the ground caused a fumble. I don't think he had possession of the football long enough for that to be considered a catch. The more replays that I've watched of it, it seemed evident to me that it was not a completed catch. So the Seahawks should have had a chance to kick a field goal there. Jason Myers would have come on. No guarantee with the wind and playing outdoors in Green Bay that that kick would have been made. But that would have tied the game. It would have been 3-3 at that point. And maybe that's the momentum Seattle needs for the offense to really turn the corner. They just needed something good to happen, and it never did for the entirety of the four quarters. So I thought those two calls really stood out. Pete Carroll has stated his disapproval with the reviews on those plays. Maybe a fine coming for Carroll, the way that he's talked about it the last 24 hours. There also was a hold on Damian Lewis that looked to me like it wasn't a hold that drove the Seahawks back on a possession in the first half as well. Maybe they would have got a field goal on that particular drive, but the Taylor missed fumble recovery and the King dropped interception, those two plays really did stand out as big officiating errors. Don't think it cost the Seahawks the game, but certainly could have changed the way that things unfolded. There's no question about it. And then last but not least, the ugly. There was a lot of it in this game, particularly in the offensive side of the football. The offensive line continues to struggle, and this has been a problem for them in Green Bay. Every time they play at Lambeau Field, the offensive line seems to forget how to pass protect. 32 total pressures allowed, according to Pro Football Focus, by the offensive line on 40 dropbacks. That's just unacceptable. Dwayne Brown struggled before coming out with an injury in the second half, gave up his seventh sack of the year in pass protection, which is now the second most in the NFL for any tackle. Just not playing up to his normal standards this year. It's been a really rough 2021 for the veteran tackle. Both guards had their share of issues. Brandon Shell got beat off edge a few times. Really, Ethan Posick was the best pass protector of this group, had a fairly solid game. But the rest of the line really struggled to keep Russell Wilson upright and prevent him from bailing the pocket. It happened frequently throughout the game. The two interceptions by Wilson, the second one obviously was a desperation heave downfield, just trying to make something happen, but it still felt like it was early enough in the game. There was enough time that they didn't need to be throwing up desperate heaves like that, that they still could have had a drive that they strung out a little bit and try to go get some points instead of throwing up a 50-50 ball like that. So I didn't like either one of those interceptions. The first one was especially bad. And yeah, Wilson has completed those passes in the past, but there were multiple defenders over there by DK Metcalf. I just don't understand what he was looking at there. And it ended up being a really poor decision that backfired on the Seahawks, missed out on the chance to get at least 3 points there. So it's unfortunate. And then on defense, really the only thing that was ugly on defense, Carlos Dunlap, what were you doing on that play in the fourth quarter when you picked up an opponent's cleat and decided to chuck it downfield? You know, I'm all for penalties when players are playing hard. You can live with that. You know, if there's a roughing the passer penalty, you can live with that a lot of the time if it's effort-based. But a penalty like that where it's just not being disciplined and not using your head, he apologized to the team after the game, as he should have. He realized it was a huge mistake. But what compels you to do that? And there's just no excuse, especially for a seasoned veteran like Carlos Dunlap. And the Seahawks had a chance to get off the field again defensively there. That extended the drive as a 15-yard penalty, and the Packers eventually scored a touchdown. So it was a killer penalty on Dunlap at the worst of times. That's a penalty. I don't care what time it happens in the game. It's inexcusable. Don't know what he was doing there, but it was one of the biggest head-scratching plays for the Seahawks in a game where there were a lot of head-scratching plays. And unfortunately, when that happens, you're playing a good football team on the road, you're typically not going to have the result go in your favor. And that's how things played out in a 17-0 loss that drops the Seahawks 3 games under 500. Thanks as always for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen every day. Now make your second listen, Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Make sure to check out Locked On Seahawks and Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Come up on tomorrow's show, Rob Rang will be returning as my co-host. The two of us will look back at both games the Seahawks played against the Cardinals last season, gearing up for their first rivalry matchup against Arizona coming up on Sunday. And we'll take a look at what's new in Arizona. The 8-2 Cardinals are coming off a tough loss to the Panthers, but one of the top teams in the NFL, the last team to remain undefeated this season, going to be a really tough test for the Seahawks. We're going to start breaking down their upcoming Week 11 opponent. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.